listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host for the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have an amazing comedian and outstanding singer, too, Miss Shilpa Das. How are you, Shilpa?
Hi. Thanks for having me, Nikhil.
Of course. You know, I saw you perform, I think the first time was at the Bourbon Room, and you wrote this crazy, funny song that has to deal with Indian, like, just traditions and stereotypes of all the things. You said all the things that we coconuts, you know, and I reference coconuts were brown on the outside and white on the inside on some levels growing up in America and whatnot. But you reference all the things that we go through as Indian Americans with the Amichis and the aunties around.
Yes.
So I want to first talk about that. Yeah, because you're such a sharp comedian, but what inspired that and what gave you the courage also to just like, let's talk about this and let it all hang out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer first that a lot of the courage comes from the fact that I know my aunties are not going to hear this and a lot of my comedy. You know, I really want to feel freedom when I'm writing, which I think probably is for all artists, not probably, definitely. So I try not to think about that. And if I really think it could be something that would cause a problem for me, I probably don't do it. But for the most part, I do feel freedom because I feel like a lot of my content is live. And as I told you earlier, like I don't necessarily tape or publicize a lot of stuff. I'm not like a social media comic. So I do feel the freedom that like something can live in the moment. And I do love that so much about more of, you know, my heart is like in live performance. And I love that you can have that moment with the audience and have it be really authentic and like kind of not have to worry about the consequences of like everybody in the world hearing it. But my inspiration for that song, as with all my comedy, that song was called Auntie Love. I wrote it about 5 years ago. And it still brings me so much joy to perform because of the reaction that it gets. It's like the reaction is that knowing laughter. It's not like, oh, a laughter because it's a funny joke. It's more of like this laughter of release and like of like another Indian woman being seen because her auntie has said the same thing to her. So it's kind of like that thing when you can have, we can have that moment, that little breakthrough moment. It just, I love that as from a writer's perspective, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it was inspired just by, I had this, a lot of times I build my song off just like one little thought, but I had a thought in the shower. I was thinking about an auntie that called me fat. And I was like, but she's so fat. And so in my mind, I was like, she's fat and she's calling me fat. I don't know what to do with that. And in my mind, I was like, that's actually like a fun, I want to play with that. I want to explore that. And so then I just built everything off that one line that became a line of the chorus. And then everything else just like came from there. Cause I thought about like these different specifics that are so true to me. When you're really specific, it connects with someone else. It's just magic, I think.
Right.
It's those specifics that make us feel seen, especially communities that don't feel seen a lot.
Right. And what's also funny is when you performed it, I just remember thinking, wow, she said the things that everybody's thinking, because the whole time when I was growing up, whenever I'd meet my parents' friends, they'd always just say these things that you're like, I can't believe you said that out loud. Like, why would you say that out loud? Like, it's just, yes, it's just like obnoxious things that it's like, and the funny thing is, it's like, if I was to say something out loud in reference to said auntie or uncle, I would really, you know, like make them look even more sheepish. But I'm like, but there's a thing called tact, and it's something that not everybody has.
Yes.
And especially there's something about the aunties or the uncles or whatever that feel they can just be that candid So there's a like a level of comfort, like, oh, I can say this and it'd be cool. And then there's a part of you that's like, it's not that cool, and it's really not that appropriate either.
Yes. So I love it. It's my way of addressing it because I can't address it to my auntie. Right. And by the way, these aunties are like not the ones you're related to. You know what I mean?
They're like
my real aunties are could not be cooler, but the aunties where you're like, I think I had a version of the song where I was like, are we even related? Just became a speaking line in the song. But I'm like, if we're not related, like, why are we doing this?
Exactly.
And I think like, why would you say that out loud? Is so I wish I put that line in there because that's literally what it is. Why would you say that out loud?
Right.
You
know? Right. No. And it's just, that's what made it so hilarious. And what's so funny is like, you know, you performed it at a South Asian comedy show. And it was a bunch of South Asian comedians, I think. And it just hit like no other with everybody, because both male and female could relate to just the awkwardness of being in a situation. Even if it's said to somebody else, you're in the room and you're like, I feel for this person that's going through this because this is ridiculous. And then when it comes around to you, something else is being said and you're just like, this is an awkward exchange for someone that I haven't seen or know or really cared too much about, that I only see once every 15 years or something crazy. Yes.
And there's nothing better than someone being like, oh, I felt that. Like, right. those were words for me. Like, there's nothing better as a writer than hearing that. I even once had an auntie after one of his shows, not that show, but a different one where I did that song. And she was like, I'm an auntie. And she said something that was like, she's like, I'm an auntie and you gave it to us or something like that. it was so cute. Like, it's like, she like listened to it and was like, right. Okay, yeah, I see where
it is. Maybe I should curb my behavior, but probably not.
She was a cool one. So yeah, it's fun to address things in these sort of playful ways, but like I'm always addressing something that is true and right. is kind of hurtful and problematic. And it's like, how can I package this in a way that I feel comfortable talking about it and sharing it and laughing about it? It's healing for me. It's right. a different way to look at that. Like, instead of feeling like shit about it, I'm like, actually, you know what? I'm going to turn this back on this. It's like my diss track.
Nice. No, but it's awesome because it's like, it was used as ammunition, maybe not harmfully. And then you use it as even more potent ammunition, not harmfully, but also making a point like, hey, maybe this bullet should never have been fired. But if we're going to play that game, I can do the same thing. Yeah. You know? So,
and I hope it's in love, because I also do try to include in that song and other things that I write the other sides of it, that right. I understand they are coming from a place of deep love. It's just, right. you know, and so I try to like package that too, so that if an auntie does hear it, they're like, okay, it's not just my cat song, you know?
Right. Right. No, that you were very graceful about okay. gracious in how you delivered all of it. But let's go way back before okay. we play that clip. Let's go way back. What was the moment of Zen that made you want to be a comedian and a writer?
It's a great question. And I don't know for me if it was a moment. I think comedy, watching comedy shows and even music separately was an escape from any difficulties in childhood, like anything. Right. It was sort of a special thing I felt I had for myself. It was like something I could kind of cultivate within myself that didn't involve the outside world. I mean, obviously it does, but for me, it felt like the experience I was having with it was personal and inclusive. And like, as a kid, that's something that I particularly felt I needed in a, you know, when you're young, you don't feel like you can control anything. But when you have this space with music or comedy or art, you have like your own safe space. I think that's probably the best way to put it, is that it was a safe space for me to explore. I was very shy as a kid, but when it came—
That's surprising. I don't see you as shy at all. You know,
I still feel like I'm pretty shy, to be honest, because socially I do feel shy. I can do it. And I've sort of like perfected the art of socialization and seeming outgoing, but I am a pretty, introverted person. But I do still love those moments, like I was talking about, those connection. I'm drawn to people. I'm drawn to energy. But the mass social scale of it all, which is why I don't do a lot of social media besides to promote my shows, it's that thing, if I'm honest, is really overwhelming to me. So being that type of person, having music, songs, comedy that I could escape into was my lifeline, and also helped me express myself when I was still not a confrontational person. And there's a lot of things I'm not comfortable addressing that I feel comfortable in a comedy space because, right. Well, you own that space. You have to own that space.
And it's also like, we're laughing about it, right? We're laughing. Everybody's laughing. Let's talk
about it. Everybody's laughing, right? And I like regularly before I prep one of my like songs or sets, or usually with my songs, I'm like, it's like coming out of something that's kind of sad. And I tell the story about it. And I'm like, yeah, and I wrote this when I was like, really didn't know who to call for help. And everyone's like, oh my God. And then the room just like gets really tight. And then I'm like, guys, don't be sad. And then it kind of cracks it up. And then, you know, then we go into the song together. And I just, that vulnerability for me is how I connect.
Right.
And it's that I feel like is my superpower, because I think it's a hard thing to do. And it's the thing that I have done that has made me love myself.
Right.
Yeah. Because I've been able to really be myself.
I got to give you a huge compliment. Coming from a singer, you have a great singing voice.
Like, that was a huge compliment for me. Thank you.
You really are a great singer. And it's like, did you start with singing and then kind of like see, oh, I can use this as another way to kind of voice another part of my art? Like,
yes.
How did that kind of like intersect with itself?
I started singing like in with lessons when I was 8 years old. I had an incredible voice teacher named Erica Macris. She passed away about like maybe about 12 years ago. But she was a huge, hugely impactful on my life. She was sort of a grandmother figure to me. She was an Austrian woman from Austria. She even sent me on an opera program to Austria once. Wow. Like, she just had such an impact on my life. She loved me and she made me feel special as an artist and as a person. And she always like, you know, gave me these special parts to sing in the songs. And I always felt like, oh, this is one person as such a shy individual to have that one person, that one teacher, that one mentor that is like, hey, I think you're special. She made me feel like that. And I'll never forget that. But I was with her from 8 to 18, taking singing lessons every week for 10 years with her and grew up with her.
What was the opera program in Europe that you went to?
You know, I don't remember the name of it. I was right before I went to college. It was a summer program. It was also funny, mostly Japanese students. Wow. And there were five American girls. I was the only brown person there for sure.
Wow.
And also we realized that like we didn't hold a candle to these like 18-year-old Japanese opera singers. They were insane. Like, so then we decided like on the first day that we would be doing like sort of like jazz and pop songs in the show. And that is what we did.
That's
because
awesome.
they were refined opera singers at that point.
Right.
And so I remember I did Someone to Watch Over Me, which is still one of my favorite
songs.
Yeah. It really has a lot of meaning for me. And I was like, I'm just gonna sing this, which felt to me so basic for this program.
Right.
But because like no one there sang jazz and they loved it and they welcomed me with open arms, and it was just a great program. But yeah, so I was singing a lot earlier than I was doing comedy. And then when I moved out to LA in 2011, and sorry about that noise here. And
was that a hair dryer?
I feel like the gardener's like just outside my window just listening to this podcast.
He's like, I'm gonna schedule this during your radio interview. Is that all right?
It's always happened. Or auditions, you know, yes. You're trying to do an audition, it's like your neighbor decides that that's when they want to like hang their collage wall, and you're like, oh god. Anyway, so when I moved out here and started my comedy journey, I dove deep in around 2013 and started at UCB in LA, the comedy school,
yeah.
Comedy theater. And then at some point it clicked that there was a whole musical comedy scene, musical improv, rap improv that I just fell into. And it was this intersection of these things that I loved. And that's where I think I found my sweet spot.
Well, what I love too, it's like, it marries my two loves. Like, I love comedy and I love music. So when I hear somebody's really good at both, it just makes me appreciate it so much, because it's also its own lane. Like, that's what I love about, like, you do stand up and you do that so well, but it's like the comedy songwriting is so specific and so kind of like its own niche that it puts you in a different stratosphere, which I love. And it's also that much harder because you're playing, singing, writing, and being funny. And it's like that fourth part that is the next level. You know, it's like, oh, you're not just a singer-songwriter anymore. Now you're a singer-songwriter who also does comedy. You're a comedian singer-songwriter. And it's like, you're just opening this other level of art, which is not easy. It's just, and it's also like, you know, this is what I wanted to ask, because I've had a lot of comedians on the show before. The funny thing that I've learned about interviewing comedians, it's like, nobody really understands that when a comedian writes a joke, you never know if it's going to hit. You know what I mean? Like your practice is the performance. And I find that to be probably the most remarkable part of the craft. So when you're writing a song and it's set, how do you know when it's going to hit and when it's not? Or how do you change those things? Or do you change those things?
Yeah, I definitely change those things. I approach it the same way as I approach stand-up, which means it's never really done.
Right.
Which I know as a songwriter, that's probably such a different, thing. Yes. You have to reach a point where it's done. It's on a record. Right. It's like you have to come up with the final version. But in the comedy space, it's sort of like you never really come up with the final version because every live performance has different nuances. And then you might find something or you might improvise something that's funnier than what you wrote. Then you want to keep that in. And this happens to me a lot is that I will think certain thing is funny. But then when I put it up in front of people, the bigger laugh is in a different place. Right. So a comedy is a lot of listening, like whether it's improv or stand up or whatever, you're always listening to see like where the connection's happening. And so if I notice that in a song when I'm performing it, that, oh, this got like a bigger laugh. Well, then next time I'm going to serve that up in a different way because I know that that's the peak and I was doing it differently. And so that also is fun because then I can continue to play with something and learn something and find something. I also have many times change something because it's no longer appropriate. Something I wrote 8 years, look, we all evolve. And like, I'm so glad that like when I really, really started, people weren't putting everything online. Right. Because there are jokes that I wouldn't stand by now for myself. And there are lines that, and we're allowed to change and evolve and grow. And I think what's important is that we like know that and admit that. Right. So I've gone back to sketches. I've gone back to jokes and lyrics and songs. And I'm like, yeah, this is not who I am today. And we need to change that. We need to change this line or whatever.
And you change it in regards to maybe it's a moment in time or the joke, or is it like the stigma, mm-hmm. or you just feel it's like, it's like an old way to look at things. Like yes. how does it evolve? Tell me some of the ways.
A lot of times it could be like racial, race related, where I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't approach it this way, which as a comic of color, I'm always kind of, that's always in the back of my mind of how I want our community to reflect the way we speak about our race and others.
Right.
So that sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it might be something that I'm like, that actually is a little harsher than I feel today. Or like, maybe it's like too specific or about someone I know or something like that. Like, there's a variety of reasons why something might change, or it might be something that was a little like vulgar that I'm like, oh, I don't want to say
this. Like, I don't want to say this
on this show or whatever. Like, I'll always keep the show in mind as well because certain things aren't going to fly. I pulled out Auntie Love for that show because that was a South Asian comedy night show, which is an amazing show. Right. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to pull this out of the vault because I think this is right for them. So it's also like kind of like gauging what's right for a certain crowd that wouldn't go over the same with like an all white crowd or something. Right. So it's kind of like you're always making changes and making decisions on your set list and everything based on the space that you're in and the place you're in. And I plan to continue to evolve my work and myself as a person. So I hope that I'm always making little tweaks and changing as I evolve too, or as I'm like, I wish I did that differently. It's like, well, I can next time I do it. That's like that's kind of like the freedom of it. And I also feel like, to address what you said before, I always find that when comedy is involved in the presentation of a sketch or a comedy or a song, I think I find it like we get away with more. That's why I think it's a little bit easier, like contradicting what you said, because I feel like, well, okay, my singing doesn't have to be perfect because people are expecting me to be a comic. When I was focusing on singing, I was like, oh my God, it's like so difficult to be what people consider a great singer, right? And we all have all very various reasons and biologically and mentally that are part of being a singer, right? But as a comic, it's like, well, when I'm a comic and doing stand-up and then I pull out a song, no one is expecting me to be Sarah Bareilles.
Right.
Like, people are like, oh, is it just a comic that's singing? And there's freedom in that space for me because I really am not thinking about how I am singing.
And ironically, you are a really solid singer. So it's like when you hear your comedy, it's like, wow, she sings really well. Oh, wait, she's singing something really funny too. So it's like you hit them with like a 1-2 punch right away. It's like it gets the people's attention and then you're making them laugh. So I'm sure it puts you at ease because there's less anxiety about, oh my God, I'm so worried about the end product. But at the same time, the end product sounds good to us. And then you're also funny. It's like, wow, you just pack a punch when you do that. You know, it's just.
Yes. I mean, thank you for saying that. And I think like the most funny thing is when you take something seriously. Right. Like, and I'm in this comedy group at UCB called Quick and Funny Musicals. And we write a 1 hour comedy every 2 months. It's such an incredibly talented group of people that I'm blessed to be in. And what's so funny is that we will do something so serious. We are executing this ridiculous musical as if we are doing Shakespeare. Like, we're so serious.
That's awesome. And that's what makes it good, though.
Things are happening. And I think that's why it comes off 10 times funnier, because these people are amazing singers. We have some Broadway stars in the group and everything. And it's like, and they're doing the dumbest things. And it's like even more enjoyable because it's being done through this lens of being so serious, which is like the thing I love the most about comedy.
Well, let's play the clip of Anti-Love. Let's start with that.
Okay.
Here is Shilpa Das with Anti-Love. All right. That was awesome. Very cool. Very, very cool. You see how we made that happen?
We're just amazing.
Magic of editing.
And you were there live for that.
I was there live. And you know what was cool is like when I saw it, I was like, because I always knew, you know, you can tell when you meet somebody if somebody's good or not.
Really?
I definitely can. Like,
it's well, that's a good meter to have in LA.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's like I've been around for so long too. And it's like you just can meet somebody and know when somebody can throw down and when somebody can't, you know. And I knew you could throw down right away. But what was so funny was how potent when you threw down that song was. I was like, man, she can really throw down. So you definitely have a gift and that song.
That means a lot. Thank you.
No, it's really awesome. I want to go back to you kind of developing this kind of vision and kind of like having that walking the walk of being an artist. Mm-hmm. In the Indian South Asian community, you know, this is, it's full of judgments. It's full of like, oh, you need to be doing what your parents want you to do. Like, how did you break the mold of that? Because I know, and that we've talked about this, I know that's always a huge obstacle just to break the stigmas of what you're supposed to be rather than what you want to be. So tell me how that shifted for you.
Yeah, I mean, you and I can talk about this for like 5 hours.
I can do a 10-hour interview just on that question alone.
Yes, and so I'll try to be concise about it, but I think for me, to be really honest, I tried to ignore it. I tried to do something else. I did a music business major in college. So it was a Bachelor of Music, but it was in business. So my parents were like, okay, we don't really know what kind of job you can get with that or whatever, which by the way, I still work full-time in that field out here. But I was doing that as a way to be like, okay, I'll do something adjacent and that's fine. And then after a few years, when I was in New York, just working and I stopped my creative projects, I'd also like lost my voice at the time. I had vocal cord surgery, a lot of things at once.
Wow.
My parents were splitting up, helping. And then when I kind of was able to look back on that time, I realized that like I was miserable because the parts of me that I loved the most, I had muffled. And so when I came out here, I still took in LA, I moved out in 2011 and I took a full-time job again in the same field. So it ended up being a blessing to have this kind of specific niche experience. And then I sort of almost secretly to myself too. Like I did not openly say, I'm going to pursue comedy and acting. I didn't tell anyone that. I just did my job, took all these classes, made all these friends, started doing sketches, did all these shows, started doing stand-up, blah, 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 blah. Like fast forward 10 years, it's like, well, by then I had built a community, my own skill set enough to have some confidence that I didn't have before. Took me years to get to even that point. And it depends on where you are in that journey, right? Of like having your own confidence as a performer. And as an artist, you're always like, especially in our community, like we're saying, people see success as money or fame, right? Or popularity, basically. Yeah. But there's so much more to being a successful artist that may be more important to us than those things.
Yes.
And that varies by...
To be honest, I don't think any of that really matters to artists. That's what I love about artists.
At the end of the day, I don't think so either if that's what your focus is. And I get this question a lot because of my age and I'm single and people are always like, well, what are you doing? Like, what's the
judgments? The judgments
of all this?
Right.
And I've reached a like place in my life, because I know, because I've experienced not doing it, where I'm like, this is a part of my life, the creation, meeting this community and being part of this, and actually just doing it. It's like, you may not see me acting on anything, but I am doing it every week.
Right.
And it fulfills something inside of me that needs to be fulfilled.
I'm gonna give you a little tidbit. When I talk to friends,
yeah,
that talk about success in money, monetary terms, which doesn't really mean that much to me. It literally doesn't mean that much to me, because to me, the way I look at it is like, if you made making money the biggest thing in your life, congrats, you just sold your soul for how little money it is that you made in the grand scheme of what it costs to sacrifice your soul for that. You know what I mean? Like, the soul is priceless. And if it's like you made $1 million or $2 million in a year, that means your soul was only worth that, to sacrifice everything that you were here for just to make that. And you can't take it with you. So you inevitably also curse yourself with that pursuit, because you can't even, you know, take it with you after your time is done. Whereas you put it into soul power, you are taking that with you. So it's like, whenever somebody talks about that, and I don't know if you ever think about it, but I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like nodding. I'm like, that's awesome. You got all these nice things. Great. And to me, I'm like, who are you deeper than that? Because that's a dark place. Cause I could tell it's probably pretty empty. You know what I mean? If that's the only thing.
Yeah. And I think that there is a great intersection that I've seen out here with people in their work and the ability to monetize that. And I think right. that is amazing if you can do that. And I think, you know, if I'm casting something that is successful, like, of course, that's the dream. But we cannot live our lives centering our happiness and our success around this dream that 4% of artists in LA achieve. It's like, I'm not willing to do that to myself.
Like, not only that, too. It's like even when somebody is super successful, like, what usually happens is their art starts to suck. And that is because they somehow reach this pinnacle that they thought was the thing, and they stop being hungry to make great art, which is the whole purpose of why we do this. So there's like a level of like, you know, when you're making your greatest art, and that is what is priceless. When I make a great song, I'm like, my God, I'm so honored that I was able to make this. And there's no price, there's no amount of money that when I know it's that good, that can buy that level of, oh my God, this is what you made. That's what people don't understand about art. It's like, that's what artists live for. We live for that moment of, oh my God, we just created this. And if you create something so great, that's what matters. And if you create something that's shitty, that makes a lot of money, you know that too, as an artist. You know when you make something that's not good, even if it's successful.
Yeah.
There's so definitely. Many artists. You know what I mean? So
I think too,
so weird.
Yeah. And I think to be successful, there's so many other factors besides art, marketing,
yes.
Socializing, networking, like these things that like you may or may not be good at as an artist. It's a separate skill set.
Well, I also asked this question. I'm like, is art good because it's marketed, or is art marketed because it's good? And that question is always the teetering balance, because there are some really, you're never going to convince me that the song Pina Colada is a great artistic merit.
But it's so fun.
It's so fun, and it's so accessible, and it's so great. But you're never going to convince me like, this is great art, and this is why it was marketed so heavily. You know, it's
fun. I love that song.
But I do too. I love that song. But I'm just saying, like, can you imagine the Picassos and the, you know, the Beethovens that are making something really great that never got that chance because Pina Colada got that slot? You know, that's what I think about all the time. Like, I'm glad it is successful, but I always think of the artists that are just like under the radar that are making something great that just don't ever get that ability to be showcased, because
and some do. I mean, there are some great artists out there. Look at like Kendrick Lamar or someone like that, like that continue to like just evolve and make great work, and then that's amazing. And we need that too, I think, like but the amount of artists there are and the amount of spaces there are in the world, it's not the same. And there's so we both and all know so many incredibly talented people. They may not be super famous, or they may do one incredible thing, but then not book again for 6 years. Like, that's just the nature of these different fields that we're in. Right. So I'm at this stage now where I'm like, I understand fully for myself that that is not what, that is not directly tied into like my own satisfaction with what I'm creating and doing. And don't get me wrong, I'm always thinking about, should I focus more on this? Should I focus more on acting? Should I do more stand up, like whatever the things are. And it's just, you know, it's about trying to find that clarity, which I am still and always trying to find for myself. Like, what is the next thing I want to do? And that might change. Right. There are some times where I'm like, I'm going to take a break from stand up. I just want to, like, you know, do my musical stuff and vice versa or whatever, or focus on acting and take a serious acting class and things like that. And that's, you know, we're all trying to figure out what works for ourselves. But looking back, I mean, to tie this together with the question you asked before, it's like looking back when I was little, what was that thing that I really wanted? And I really think that it was to have an artist's life. And so when I'm in those places where I, you know, didn't book, or any on one of the many rejections we constantly face, I'll remind myself that, like, you are living an artist's life. And I'm also working full time too. So it's a constant hustle. That's why I look like this. I'm tired.
You look great. You look great.
But it's that thing where I'm like, okay, but remind yourself, this is what you wanted and this is what you're doing.
Well,
and
it doesn't have to be tied to
a million things.
You're documenting your life and all the experiences up and down, whatever it is, to make the art. I mean, how many people can be that bold? And I feel like the one parallel are athletes. Like, they go through highs and lows, especially watching the Olympics. I was watching Simone Biles just now, and I wept after she won the gold today. And I was just like, you know, 4 years ago, she trained just as hard 4 years prior and then sat it out because of her mental health. And I was like, what a bold move, and what an amazing teaching lesson for all of us to learn. Like, yo, if your head's not in the game, yeah, sit it out. It's okay. And then she comes back 4 years later and dominates. And it's like, I was like, this, I love when people win. And that's the thing about athletes and artists. There's like this parallel of like documenting their life experience through the ups and downs with creating, channeling something to be a better version of themselves from moment to moment. And that is not what everybody can do, and they're not capable of, you know?
Right. And every like athlete out there, it's like, well, if you're not an Olympic athlete, that doesn't mean you're not a failed athlete, right? You're like also having those like kind of standard. It's incredible to have people that are so inspiring to be like, yes, I can do this. And I think people should strive to do the very best thing that they can or want to do, but also know that our value and our value, I guess it's really just the value. Like, our value does not lie with the,
It's not one thing.
No, our value is in the journey and treating ourselves well in that journey and evolving our work and making a community, like being part of it like that. That's really, I think, the value as well. And for those people that do reach those points of success that we all, that are, you know, tangible to everyone, great. It's great, especially for a community like South Asian community. There's not a lot of us out there. So when I see someone I know, or like, you know, one of my friends, like, get cast on something that I can see, and it's like, it's, I could not be more proud, because also I'm like, now the next generation are watching them in movies and TV, and hopefully someone will see me and be like, okay, I'm a female comic, like maybe I can do that, or like that's what we're all going for, because that didn't exist when I was young. So I didn't think there was a place for me. That was a big part of the confidence that I needed to build. And so now it's like, there's clearly a place for us, and people are showing that. And I think that is like so inspiring, because even if it's not to achieve that, whatever the goal is, it still will encourage artists to move forward in that journey, which I think is so healthy if that's the kind of person you are. Because if you don't do it, you're going to feel that in your bones.
Let's showcase another piece of your work. What's the name of the piece that we have that is ready to go?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you, Shilpa. I forgot the title of it.
Okay. Emergency Contact, which features the amazing Grammy-winning Nikhil Kurula.
Oh, that's the clip we have ready? That's the one that's good? Oh, okay. Well,
wait, I don't know if that's like the ready
one. Oh, well, Sam, which is the one that's ready? Well, no.
No.
Sam,
okay.
That's not it.
All right. No. So,
it's called Be Mine. Here's Be Mine.
Okay. This is just a vocal recording I did of a song that I loved.
Here's Be Mine by Shilpa Das.
It's not simple to say that most days I don't recognize me, but these shoes and this apron, that place and these patrons have taken more than I gave them. And it's not easy to know I'm not anything like I used to be, although it's true, I was never attention's sweet center, but I still remember that girl. She's imperfect, but she tries. She is good, but she lies. She is hard on herself. She is broken and won't ask for help. She is messy, but she's kind. She is lonely most of the time. She is all of this mixed up and baked in a beautiful pie. She is gone, but she used to be mine. And it's not what I asked for. Sometimes life slips in through a back door and carves out a person and makes you believe it's all true. And now I've got you, and you're not what I asked for. If I'm honest, I know I would give it all back for a chance to start over and rewrite an ending or two. But who learns how to toughen up when she's bruised and gets used by a man who can't love? And then she'll get stuck and be scared of the life that's inside her, growing stronger each day till it finally reminds her to fight. To bring back the fire in her eyes that's been gone, but it used to be mine. Used to be she's kind. She is lonely most of the time. She is all of this mixed up and baked in a beautiful pie. She is gone, but she used to be mine.
That was awesome. That was so great. You know, Sarah's a friend of mine. She and I used to play shows together.
My gosh. I love Sarah Brill. That song's from awesome. Waitress the Musical.
You know, and I actually emailed her when it was playing, because I actually emailed her months before And I said, hey, what are you doing? Are you working on music? Let's do some co-writing. And she's like, I'm actually working on a musical right now. So like, I have all these crazy deadlines. Didn't know anything about what she was about to release. And then she said, oh, it's this thing called Waitress.
Oh, amazing.
It'll be coming out. And then when it did, I went to the final showing in LA and I was like, oh my God, I didn't think you were writing like a musical. Like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
She's awesome. She's an
incredible writer, yeah. Performer, singer. Yeah. She's someone I really, truly have always looked up to as an artist. And when I first heard this song, it just got me in the heart. And when I feel that with certain songs, I'm like, you have to sing it.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No.
This is the experience I'm having with it, you know?
Yeah. And she's also doing a little bit of comedy now. She's doing Girls Five Eva.
Which I love.
I haven't seen it yet, but
it's so adorable and funny and speaks to kind of this like artist journey thing that we talked about a little bit, because this band gets together later and they didn't make it on their first go. And I think they're in their late 30s or 40s and they're like, now what? And it's really funny.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. What's next for you? And also you have these South Asian AF shows that you're putting together. You've been doing for a long time.
Yes.
Are you doing more stand-up? What's next and where can people find you?
Yeah, next up, so South Asian AF is the South Asian variety show that you've been on that we started in 2018. It's been a huge labor of love and built this huge community around it now. Our next show is actually October 19th, a little bit of ways away, but at South Asian AF show on Instagram, we'll have all the details about, I post when we're going to do our shows. And so follow that to keep kind of up on what's going on with that world. And then I perform regularly at UCB. I'm with this Quick and Funny Musicals group every month. And then I'm doing stand-up.
Let me know next time you do that. You have to let me know next time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You'd get a kick out of it. They're a blast.
And you should be doing musical theater, by the way. I saw the clip of you just doing the Sarah Bareilles song. I'm like, why is she not doing musicals? Like, you should be doing musicals. You should.
I never thought I could.
But you definitely can, and you should. And you got the comedic chops. You got the acting chops. You got the singing chops.
Maybe that's on my list for future, because I used to do when I was younger, but I haven't done any like professional, just real musicals, not comedies. But yeah, so I'm around. You can catch me at Shugd, S-H-U-G-D on Instagram for my shows. I'm always performing stand up or musical improv or a variety of comedy acts at different shows around town. So I perform pretty much every week.
Well, Shilpa, it's been a pleasure to interview you. We're going to have you back in about 9 or 10 months because we want to keep on following your journey. That's the whole point of the show.
Amazing. So
we're going to have you back. And thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Shilpa, we'll see you guys next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And good night.
Thank you.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.